Tis the season to sit around and give hot takes, historical background, theological implications about the most, what the streets are saying is the most wonderful time of year. So we're going to talk about Christmas. Welcome back to Coffee with Friends. Let's just cut to the chase and have the most important conversation we can have. After the dreadful news that Patrick Mahomes blew his ACL, are the Chiefs cooked? They're obviously cooked this year. They're not making the playoffs. I'm saying just in general as a franchise, are we watching a dynasty crumble?
Your sister is going to get mad at you that we could keep on talking about football.
I don't care about my sister. She means nothing to me. I'm just kidding. Love you, girl.
Emma Short, you heard that.
You, Emma.
I would never say
you're
that.
You're my dog.
Personally.
Emma's pulling for the Chiefs because of Taylor, but...
Hey, since Cooper forgot to do it, we do have a fourth man in the chair.
Gabe is back with us. I didn't forget to do it. We always do the intro after the banter.
Okay, we'll edit that out then.
Edit what out?
What I just said.
No, it's fine. We'll leave it. What do we think?
I'll go first. I do think over time the Chiefs, let's see, with Mahomes ACL, I think that their dynasty has come to an end. And it's not simply because he got hurt or that Travis Kelce is retiring. I think they are cooked because I think the Chargers and Broncos are on the rise, and I think they're going to take over that division. I don't think the Raiders are there yet, or in the future will be.
No.
I think they're going to be bad for a while. That's kind of my reason, I think.
Pete Carroll chewing gum will not save the Las Vegas Raiders.
Pete Carroll chewing gum and wearing the Nike Air Monarchs.
Hey, those are low-key fire, but still won't save them.
Personally, I think the problem that we see with the Chiefs that we never saw with the Patriots is they don't really build. I don't think that they build well regardless of their success, because we saw the years where Tom Brady would win with a bunch of nobodies at wide receiver. You know,
some undrafted white guy.
Yeah, you have some random
Fresno State.
Danny Amendola.
The Chiefs got nobodies at receiver. Who plays receiver for the Chiefs?
Rasheed Rice.
Yeah, Xavier Worthy.
Hold on, pause. Rashee Rice just got out of, basically should have gone to prison. Okay,
What I'm saying is,
secondly, Xavier Worthy is only a relevant name because he ran fast at the combine. All he did was run vertically
same
in college.
Thing as Ethan,
okay, can you let me finish my point? What I'm saying is the Patriots still built on these things and were able to be super successful regardless of who they had. It seems like the Chiefs have been too reliant on people like Mahomes and Kelce, that whenever they don't play good, like the rest of the team just can't do anything about it. Because, I mean, how do you have Chris Jones on defense and you're still what? You know, they're what? They win seven games? Six and eight?
I just know they're mathematically out of playoffs.
Yeah, they're 6-8 now because them and Miami had the same record after last week. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's they're low-key cooks unless they kind of change some stuff up with the way that they kind of build personnel. And
Gabe, let me ask you this. Do you think it's time for the Chiefs to kind of like tear down and try to build something new, or do you think they still have a good deck of cards to build around?
I mean, as long as you have Patrick
what
Mahomes.
A crazy sentence.
I think if you still have Patrick Mahomes.
A good deck of cards to build around.
Yeah. You still got a good hand.
If you still got Patrick Mahomes, you're fine. It's going to be
I agree with that.
Who they put around Mahomes, how they can protect Mahomes, what kind of weapons they give Mahomes. And I don't know. I think maybe them not making the playoffs, not having him the rest of the year, they can kind of just not do so well, get a better draft pick, maybe even make some good trades, get some people back, or get some people that they need. So, yeah, that's my take. I don't think they're necessarily cooked long-term if they do the right things, but if they keep going the way that they're going, yes, they are cooked.
I'll just go ahead and say, and mine will be short because we're not talking about football for 25 minutes, that I think Patrick Mahomes.
Well, okay, sorry, man. Didn't mean to offend you with my football question.
It's for Emma because, you know, she gives us down the road.
Sorry that I bothered you with my friendship.
All right, man. You're wearing an Oregon shirt.
Yeah, go Ducks.
But anyways.
Dang,
really
is Carolina
give
in the
him,
playoffs? I didn't think so. Anyway.
Can I talk? I mean, what is this?
Sure, go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, whether you want to give him credit or not, Patrick Mahomes is a stud of an athlete and a quarterback.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
With sports medicine today, he will come back and be healthy, and I think be good. Now, Gabe brings up a good point. It's who's around him. Can the Chiefs have people around him to get the job done? I don't know. So we'll see. My take is that I think Patrick Mahomes will come back and be good, whether the team's good or not. I think he'll play well. So
basically like Joe Burrow with the Bengals. He's playing well. The Bengals are terrible.
And either way, Patrick Mahomes signed a 10-year deal in 2020, meaning he will be a Kansas City Chief until, what, 2030?
Till he's a grandpa.
Yeah, so easy math.
Philip Rivers.
Yeah. Hey, Philip Rivers coming back, throwing a touchdown. It's pretty iconic.
Let me ask this one question.
Built like a DM.
Quick answer from Brad. We'll go around the table. The Carolina Panthers had one job. They have to win one of their games and beat the Tampa Bay Bucks once. They have four games left. We just lost and blew the game against the Saints. Worst team in the league. So now we have to beat...
Are the Saints worse than the Jets?
Well, one of the worst, okay? We now play Tampa Bay twice and the Seattle Seahawks. We either beat Tampa twice or we beat Tampa once and have to beat the Seahawks once. Can the Panthers do it to get into the playoffs? No. Lucas, yes or no? What are your thoughts?
Yes.
Ah, he's hopeful.
I mean, as much as I will complain and I will gripe about the Panthers, I love them, and they are going to do it. The Bucks is falling apart. Top Bulls need to be fired. Shout out Marty Lovingood. He agrees. he needs to be fired. They're falling apart. I don't think Baker can get it done. I think he's great. Love Baker. Don't hate him at all. But I don't think they're going to get it done, because I think rather we're going to split and beat Seattle, or we're going to get the Bucks twice, because I think we can do it.
I think it's actually more likely we beat the Bucks twice.
Yeah.
Cooper, what you got?
No, they can't do it. And, yes, I think the Chiefs are cooked.
He's a hater.
Okay. Thank you for summarizing.
I think the Chiefs are totally toast. I think we'll look back and see this is the downfall of their dynasty, him tearing his ACL. That's my hot take.
Pretty interesting. We're going to look back in about a year from now and see if that's accurate.
Well, I think you got to give it a couple years, but I think they are already on the decline, and they're older, has been there for a long time quarterback, had a pretty major injury. They're losing Travis Kelce. They probably will lose someone else because rosters always do. I think they're done.
Yeah. Did Tom Brady not tear his ACL one year in the mid-2000s? Mm-hmm. And how many more Super Bowls did he win after that?
Like, yeah, but
three or four?
Dude, there's been one Tom Brady. There's not going to be 10 more of them, you know. Plus, they had Belichick. They didn't have Andy Reid, who looks like a walrus.
I'm willing to say the Patriots were only successful because of Tom Brady. Hot take. Tom Brady left. Patriots fell apart. Just saying.
Yeah, answer my question before we go further.
The Panthers will not do it. I don't think they got it.
I wish they would, and I'm clinging on to hope.
Because the Miami Dolphins are not going to make the playoffs, and the Panthers, they can't make the playoffs if the Dolphins don't make it. I can't let that happen.
We beat y'all, so
yeah,
take
okay.
that.
Yeah, whatever.
Shout out Jeff Johnson. He don't know ball.
Anyways, welcome back to Coffee with Friends. This is a podcast about faith and practice meant to inform and encourage people to live a life on mission for the gospel.
I'm Lucas.
I'm John Harmon.
I'm Gabe.
And I'm Cooper. Gabe Short, friend of the podcast, member of my family, legend of this community.
Is back UNC in the Wilmington.
UNCW, right, not a football school, back in the chair today to have some conversation.
10-1 in basketball. Nolan Hodge.
Dude. All right. I'm getting a group of guys from FPC, and we're beating Wilmington in a basketball game.
Yeah,
give me Andrew Pong.
Yeah, straight up.
Okay.
Today we're going to be talking about Christmas. Where it came from, what to think about it, things that we think are important from Christmas. It feels really obligatory, but in the grand shuffle of this cultural moment, a lot of people fail to realize exactly what it is that we're doing. And, as we'll talk about a little bit later, I would make the contention that instead of complaining about the commercialization of Christmas, perhaps we should celebrate it as believers. But I'll get there in due time. So the first thing is, we're going to go around the table. I'll go first, because this is going to be straight up, probably the spiciest take that we're going to have, given our relative audience. But I could say it because I pastor my own church. Christmas hot takes as they pertain to your local church. Okay. Here's my hot take. There should absolutely not be a cantata on the morning of your Christmas service. People usually make their Christmas service the service before Christmas or whatever. You should not take up the entire service for a Christmas cantata. Why do I say that? Well, because one, singing songs isn't preaching the Bible. Mm-hmm. Two, if you have a lot of people that may theoretically only come to your service for a couple times a year, and that's one of them, they need to hear the word preached. Thirdly, it is often the case that churches put a lot more effort into a cantata than they do to other things, and I don't want to vindicate that effort by allowing them to take up what is the only gathering of our church for the week as a whole body and let them sing songs all the time. My church is having a cantata. We're having it on Sunday evening together with our candlelight service, and I think that's great. It'll be a lot of fun. But I'm not going to let them take up the entire Sunday morning worship gathering to do their cantata. That's my hot take.
It's not crazy. I'll go next. Yeah, I'll go next. So my hot take is, it's not really that hot. I think it's more of an opinion. that churches don't have to do an Advent wreath or candlelight. I think it's something that some churches do, and I think it's cool. I think others don't. Personally, at our church, we're not doing it this year. We just made a decision that we're just not going to do it. Not for really any reason, but we're just not doing it. So I think, you know, some people say, oh, we got to do it. We got to do it. You don't really have to, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's a cool idea, but it's not a have to. Mm.
FPC is the only church that I know of personally that does it. Now, granted, I haven't been to a million churches, but like my church in college didn't do it.
Yeah.
The church I used to work at didn't do it. Dallas doesn't do it where I'm at now. So Bethlehem does it.
Is it, are you talking about the Advent candles, like the Joy, Hope, you light the candles? Yeah, we do it. We don't do actual lighting. We have like the, you click the button and it's fake.
LED lights, baby.
Actually, not that I disagree. Obviously, I don't think it's like you have to do it, like you said, like a legalistic thing. I just think it's kind of cool, like a cool tradition.
Yeah, and I'm not saying like, oh, you shouldn't do it or you should. Yeah, I'm
but,
saying.
But you shouldn't get bent out of shape if your church doesn't do it. Yeah, I can agree with that. My hot take, not really a hot take, just something that I don't like that a lot of churches do, is like when Christmas time gets here, we get so busy with kind of like what you said with like cantatas or just different traditional services that you do, and the normal services that you would do in terms of teaching the word just kind of gets pushed to the side. Mm-hmm. And so I tell our church this all the time, nothing against Bethlehem, I love Christmas time, but we, like, I'm the youth pastor, so of course we always keep Sunday morning the same. That should always be the same with the preaching of the word. So I do support what Cooper said there, but I don't get a lot of teaching time at night for the youth and kids that I value. And so I just wish we could.
And you know what they'll tell you. You know what they'll tell you. They'll always say, well, people are real busy. Which, first off, is totally false, by the way. Secondly, yeah, they're busy doing other things we planned. Yeah. That was always my contention. Well, we're real busy. Well, we added 5 church events to the calendar. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they're busy because you got them coming here for other things. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. And from my perspective, this is like the least busy time for the kids. I want to say that lightly because I know families are running around, especially at Christmas time. I understand that. But like when they're out for school over Christmas break, like a lot of them will text me on just a random week, like, hey, can we go shoot basketball at the church? Can we play Ghost in the Graveyard or Mafia or something? Because they still want to get together. And so I wish we could kind of keep our services. It's hard because there are obviously times that you have to do stuff on those nights. And I understand that. But I feel like we just kind of, the month of December basically is just like all of it's kind of out the window except for like the first week. So
yeah, and from the perspective of like going youth, like from us, like kids are out. Like shout out Joseph Johnson, he's out today.
He
wants to hop on the Xbox. I mean, it's the 15th and they're already out of school. Some of them.
Yeah.
Hey, back where I used to live in Alamance County, their school system, they got out even earlier than you guys do because the exam stretch of the public school calendar was a longer period. And because they do these, like, if you have an A in the class, no need to take the exam anymore, I would have students be out for a month. Public school kids be out for a month, maybe longer, because they don't really have to go to class. So, like, yeah, why would we not do at least, I mean, at minimum, our regularly scheduled programming? But anyways, Gabe, local church Christmas hot take.
Well, seeing as I'm not a leader of a local church, this is a little different for me. But I guess coming from a member's perspective, somebody who just attends.
Lay member.
I think churches need to do a good job of, I think this has kind of already been stated, but I've always felt this way about reiterating the importance of church regardless of what time of year it is. Because I feel like a lot of people get caught up and being like, oh, we're going to Christmas. We're going to church because it's Christmas. You know, we're going to get involved. We're going to do these events because it's around Christmas. And whereas that is an important time, we need to make sure they know that being involved in the church is a year-round event. It's a year-round thing, and it's not important just because it's celebrating the birth of Jesus. It's important.
Or a couple of years ago when Christmas was on a Sunday and people had the gall to ask if we were having church.
Yeah.
And I wanted to fight them. Like, what do you mean, are we having church? The only reason you have church is because Christmas happened. One of the only reasons, at least. Right, yeah, what an insane question. So what we're going to talk about is Christmas, obviously. Really quickly, what I'm going to do is go through the major 30,000-foot flyover of the history of Christmas. Now, look, this is something, the information that I'm about to communicate is up for a little bit of historical debate because this is a controversial subject, what I'm about to support. and we can have a conversation about it. And whoever's listening to this, I would encourage you just to do your own research, because at the end of the day, I don't think it really matters that much, low-key. We'll talk about in a little bit why I don't think it matters that much when we get to the theological implications of Christmas. But this is sort of the mainstream historical take on where we got Christmas, the holiday, from. So, originally, this celebration of Christmas that happens on December 25th or in the wintertime for us, this sort of event came from Roman Emperor Constantine. Okay, so let's call it the year between 315 and 330 AD. So about 315, Constantine, it's sort of debated on whether or not Constantine as a Roman Emperor becomes a Christian, but what he definitely does is in 315 AD with the Edict of Milan, he legalizes Christianity. You're allowed to be a Christian now legally in the Roman Empire without being persecuted for, among other religions. So they weren't really necessarily chosen or anything.
Which was huge.
Yeah, big deal.
Especially in that empire, yeah.
Big deal. And so what they proceed to do is they essentially hijacked an already existent holiday called Sol Invictus, or Saturnalia, I think is how you pronounce that. And they just essentially took the celebration of the Nativity and they placed it on a pre-existing sort of holiday that was already happening. Now, before you guys comment, I know there are people that don't believe the historical record. They think that, like, it never came from a pagan holiday. Christmas itself is not a pagan holiday. I'm personally of the historical persuasion that they replaced a pagan celebration because the date and the culture was already sort of centered around it. I don't think it's that big of a deal, but that is where I think Christmas came from. And so that's where I think that the actual holiday itself came from, which I don't think is that big of a deal. What are your thoughts? Anybody have any strong disagreement about that?
Not really.
No. Okay. I've always been under the impression that it replaced a pagan holiday, but it's not a pagan holiday.
Yeah, basically what happens, a similar thing happens with all the stuff that's in Jerusalem now, all the historical sites. A very similar sort of retconning of that happens where they're like, oh, wow, these sites are really important. So what they did was they did things like build the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and all these structures that at the time were very normative to like say, hey, we're gonna sort of turn this into a museum by building a building on top of where we think Jesus was crucified. That's functionally essentially what they did with the holiday of Christmas. But the most important thing is that Christmas itself as a celebration, no matter your time or place, has always been a celebration of the birth of Christ. Mm-hmm. Always.
I had this question. Everybody always debates the two holidays of Halloween and Christmas because it has, like, if you want to call it pagan roots is what they would like to say. And so they say churches shouldn't have, like, fall festivals or what you would call here Hallelujah carnivals because it's on Halloween and it has that root. And then they'll say the same thing about Christmas because of what you just read. But I heard a preacher say one time, I asked him that question because I was very confused when I first got into ministry. And he said the way he looks at it is we are taking something back from Satan and using it for good in the church. If we can still use it as an outreach to get people here and take it from those pagan roots and turn it into something good. Now, you know, we did have a podcast of, is it the best ministry model to just simply make it an attraction to just get a bunch of people? You know, you can go listen to that other podcast later, but still, that's why I don't really think it's that big of a deal, because we very clearly are not celebrating the pagan holiday to begin with. So,
and something else that I'll talk about again in just a minute, but we are so far removed from historical Christmas anyways, like in terms of what our culture actually does. Like, it's not even you'd have to go four or five steps really philosophically to even get back to whatever you think the pagan roots are. Like, when Coke makes a polar bear commercial with Santa Claus in it, that ain't got absolutely nothing to do with that little historical story I just told. Like, for all intents and purposes, in our context in the United States, it's a commercialized sort of cultural holiday. But we'll talk about that in just a second. So, with all that being said, Lucas, would you please read for us the actual one of the biblical accounts of the Christmas story? The one that people are most familiar with, at least, right?
Yeah, so I'll be reading from Luke chapter 2, verses 1 through 7. This is the birth of Jesus Christ, and it says, "In those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world shall be registered. That was the first registration when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be registered, each to his own town. And Joseph also went up to Galilee, from the town of Nazareth, to Judea, the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. And while they were there at that time, came for her to give birth. She gave birth to her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling cloths, and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn.
Now we know if we sort of capture the whole Christmas story, right? Angel comes to Mary, tells her that she's going to be with child, and it's going to be from the Holy Spirit, despite the fact that she's a virgin, and they shall call his name Jesus, because his name and the purpose of his life is that he will save his people from his sins. And so, yes, they go, and they have to have a baby in really what is sort of the extra space of a family's house. It's not like a hotel, right? And it's not like a barn. It's like the extra space. Animals come in at night because that's what they did. Mm-hmm. And Mary gives birth to the Son of God who has become incarnate, right? And then later in Luke, the angels or the shepherds see an angel, and he tells them to go and find this born son and worship him. And then later the wise men come from afar. And my take has always been low-key. I think the wise men are Zoroastrians, but it's a different discussion for a different day. Because why else would they be following stars? But yes, this is the birth of Christ, sort of told by at least the Gospel of Luke. Now, my question for the three of you is, first and foremost, just sort of general thoughts about the Christmas story. I know you got some. So what are they?
Do you mean like hot takes? Or
no, I mean just what do you think about the Christmas story?
I mean, obviously it's miraculous and...
Sure.
Very fascinating to read. I mean, I don't really know where to go with this.
Well, I mean, I think one thing that always sticks out to me about the Christmas story is that the Christmas story is extremely underwhelming. There's nothing that's really mind-blowing about that unless you actually know who the baby is. Mm. Right now, I mean, we do. Right? But even in this account by Luke, it's decree went out from Caesar Augustus that everyone should go be registered. And then this family goes because it's where the husband is from. And she gives birth to her son, and they wrap him in swaddling clothes and lay him in a manger. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, when we think about, like, we sing all these Christmas songs, you know, and O come, Emmanuel, and Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and blah, blah, blah. We sing Joy to the World. We sing all these songs about him, and there's sort of this glorious pronouncement of the birth of Christ. And some of those glorious pronouncements come, I mean, just after that, when the angels and the shepherds interact with each other, there is sort of a glorious pronouncement, but I've always been fascinated by Luke's account where he's just like, yeah, man, this is exactly what happens. And if I were to read that in no context, it sounds really super normal in a lot of ways. We know the baby is abnormal. We know he's extraordinary. But the story itself, really, in many ways, just sort of on a surface level, is pretty normal, you know, because we fail to realize sometimes that God sort of enters his creation. He doesn't just come and stand alongside of it and do something adjacent to his creation. He actually enters it in through the incarnation, which I think is pretty cool. But in light of that, what, from your perspective, when we think about Christmas, okay, before we get to sort of the more tangible things, what are the theological implications of Christmas? Like, why does it matter that it's recorded in the Bible? Why does it matter that we celebrate it? Why does it matter that we teach it? Why does it matter that we read it? As it pertains to the faith once for all delivered to the saints, what's the importance of Christmas? And I think this has probably about a million answers. So just go ahead and shoot from the hip here.
First off, you look at the prophecy being fulfilled. I mean, throughout the Old Testament, you think about Isaiah, of that there will be a coming Savior. And there's tons of prophecy of Jesus, but just of the birth and that he will be from the line of David. David's promise that through his line, the king will always be on the throne.
Yeah.
And so I just think that prophecy being fulfilled, that's so important, that of how it goes about to be fulfilled, it's pretty amazing when you go back and look. And that's like the first thing I think of.
Yeah, the sermon I just preached this past Wednesday, the one Wednesday night we had this month, was on the first prophecy of the Messiah from Genesis 3:15, mm-hmm. that God is going to send this. What I used in the sermon was a snake crusher, somebody who is going to crush the serpent's head, but the serpent is going to strike that person's heel, obviously referring to this Messiah figure. And so through the sermon, we just kind of went through all of these prophecies, as Lucas said, from the Old Testament. And I think that's the major part of Christmas that pastors need to do a good job of emphasizing at Christmas time, is the reason we celebrate this, that it is such a big deal, is that guy who is going to crush the serpent, signifying taking away of sin, defeating the evil one, is here. Like, he is born now. Like, it's not just a baby laying in a manger. This redemption plan, although it was always in the process in the Old Testament, like, I don't really know how to say this, but like, he's here now, and the plan is, the wheels are officially turning. Not that they weren't before, but you can see it physically now that he is actually on the earth. And so, yes, Lucas, prophecy is the big one for me, but also just the fact that God became a human. We can read John chapter 1 where we see the Word became flesh. And this is just a radical idea that the creator of the world, who speaks all things into existence, would take on humanity as well, and even death on a cross.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and good take. And that the thought process of it, how easy are we in church as members going about our daily life, especially around Christmas time, do you think, oh yeah, Jesus came and was born. But how much do we think about how crazy that is? Mm. That the Creator became flesh and dwelt among us, became a child in a manger, and was born, lived a life, and was died, and was crucified. It's crazy to think. The Creator that spoke the wind and the waves into motion is the same one who speaks it on earth to stop, that he's in his own creation. It's kind of like a mind-blowing thing we can't really fully comprehend. It's extraordinary, and it's mind-blowing to even just try to comprehend.
I don't know if humility is the right word. Perhaps it is. But just the fact that God, in all of his sovereignty, all of his omniscience, his power, would come down. And I know this may sound, people may get mad at me for saying this, but
I'll get mad at you.
He probably will. God allowed himself through the person of Christ to become a baby, to do things like use the bathroom on himself as a baby, to be nursed by a woman, to grow up, have to be educated in as a young boy. I mean, like, to do all those things, like, he didn't have to, but that was always his plan. And yeah. I think that just thinking about the humanity of what Christ took on, I think it speaks volumes to the love that he has.
Yeah, it was always plan A. There was never no plan B.
I think humility is the right word. Here's what Philippians 2 says. Let's see. Have this mind among yourselves, Paul says, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that in the name of Jesus every knee shall bow, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Yeah, I think it is objectively humility, right? I mean, insane to think that they were looking for a Messiah to save them from the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire pales in comparison to the power of sin. And so they were looking for a warrior king to come and lead them to the promised land and charge everybody with a sword. And in reality, they got a humble, fairly ordinary baby, at least from the surface level understanding of Jesus' birth. And it's really humility that won the day, right? How did Jesus defeat his enemies? By being more humble than them. And the humility, like, humble to the point that he let them put him to death over something he didn't actually do, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's my theological implication is there's no Easter without Christmas. Mm-hmm. I mean, the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ is the only thing that can save you from sin and the grave, but Jesus had to be born a man in order to be killed as one. And so they're really two sides of the same coin. I wouldn't even conceptually separate them, honestly. We do that sort of culturally, but there is no death without a birth, and the birth was for the death and then therefore the resurrection, for the new birth. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably the biggest theological implication of Christmas.
Yeah, I was going to say, talking about the humility part, it's kind of what I always think about, but the prophecy that was fulfilled, I was reading last night in The Cost of Discipleship by Bonhoeffer, talking about when Jesus, you know, says he comes to not to destroy the law and prophets, but to fulfill them, and how, you know, the birth of Christ obviously led to that and led to lots of fulfilling of the prophecy, but how Jesus becomes the righteousness that we need in order to get to heaven. You know, he doesn't, something has to come between us and righteousness, and that is Jesus, because his death on the cross, you know, fulfills him becoming the full righteousness that we need to get to heaven. Mm. And without, obviously, him being born, we don't have that. You know, like you said, without Christmas, we don't have Easter. And I always, like, once again, I also think about the humility part of it, because even though he was coming and he was right and he was the savior of the world. And, you know, obviously we know he was God. He had so much love and compassion and cared so much about his people and had so much humility that he literally let the people who were wrong kill him, who were objectively wrong, kill him because he cared about them so much. And he was using that to fulfill the prophecy and using that to fulfill his, you know, like destiny, so to speak. That's always what I think about, just kind of the humility aspect of it and how it kind of led to more of what we believe in terms of his death on the cross and things being fulfilled.
Yeah, so those are the theological implications of Christmas, which are obviously the most important. What are the cultural implications of Christmas? Here's what I mean by that. Let me go on a short diatribe. Okay. I thought of this morning.
Good word.
Something that makes me mad these days.
Oh gosh, here we go.
And I actually changed my tune on this in the last couple of years. Okay. I used to be this guy and I repent and confess that sin. Cultural implication of Christmas. There are a lot of people these days that love to whine and moan about the fact that Christmas has been commercialized. They're commercializing the birth of Christ. Okay, first off, who cares? Okay. Secondly, they're doing that because it's the United States. So praise God for religious freedom that in some ways the savior of my sins gets put on ornaments at the store, right? I don't have to go hide in a closet to pray to him and worry that my church is going to get killed by the government. Okay. Furthermore, though, the cultural implication of Christmas I'm sort of getting at is we have a free cultural moment for essentially 6 weeks to talk about Jesus and his birth, and therefore, as we've just mentioned, his death, his burial, and his resurrection, without really batting an eye, and without really anybody batting an eye at us. You know, if the worst thing we get told is to say happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas, get over yourself. We have a free pass to talk about Christ, no strings attached, because it's literally called Christ Mass, right? I think that's a wonderful cultural implication. I mean, if anything, it's going to force more people into your church for 6 weeks. It's going to make everything a little softer and nicer and kinder. And so people are going to be a little more ready to have a conversation with you and stop and talk to you outside the store and come over to your house for a meal. People are going to get invited to your family gatherings that otherwise wouldn't be there on any normal time of the year, any other normal time of the year. I'm not a big like holiday guy. I don't do a lot of celebrating per se. I mean, we didn't even put a tree up this year because we got a baby coming and I didn't want to take the tree down at the same time my daughter gets here. But at the same time, man, the longer I work at church, I try to encourage my church. I'm like, man, we have a free cultural moment to share the gospel with no criticism for 6 weeks. Nobody's coming for us. Like, especially not particularly where we live. Like, we don't live in Yemen. Our culture celebrates Christmas. This isn't North Korea. So we ought to just be really grateful for that because, yes, it is a little annoying that you have to listen to songs and music all the time and that everybody themes everything. But you know why they're doing that as a believer. You know the real reason why the culture's even doing that. And so why not leverage it? Easy way to leverage it. Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
No, that was good.
Cultural implications of Christmas, birth of Christ.
I was, sorry.
Ooh.
I'll come right
that one out.
My fault. I was going to say, I've always, the older I've gotten, I really love I'd say around, you know, the end of the year holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, but really Christmas kind of emphasizes family a lot.
Yeah, good take.
The importance of family. And I think if people are willing to because not everybody has a great relationship with their family. You know, people are at odds. People may not, you know, get along really well, you know, yada, yada, yada. But I've always loved, and now that, like, especially I'm older, I understand better that if people are willing to kind of put their feelings aside for different times of the year and get together and just be together as a family and kind of love each other and be a family unit, I've really become a proponent of that. Because I think the holidays give people a lot of reason to kind of get over themselves in a way, to kind of realize that there's more important things than, you know, think the problems that they may have with other people and feelings that they may have. And I've always liked that because I think we've already talked about, you know, the importance of Jesus coming as a baby and the humility. And from that, you know, we get the death, burial, and resurrection. And I think you know, if we fully believe that, affirm that, like you said, are willing to kind of go around talking about that, sharing that with people, then I also think that as people, as, you know, people within our own families, within our own communities, we should also be the people that are willing to kind of love our people, love our family, even when it's hard, you know, reach out to them, be, you know, be good to them, and not really let things like that get in the way. And so, yeah, the older I've gotten, the more I think Christmas, Thanksgiving, really, like we're talking about Christmas today, pertaining to family is a really big thing for me, and I think it's a net positive because a lot of people need that around the holidays, and I think it's good that we kind of push that, regardless of if you're celebrating Christmas as a Christian or you're a non-Christian or whatever. I think from the overall Christmas story, the importance of the family unit is a net positive for the culture.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. That's probably my favorite thing of Christmas. Like, I know people always complain, like, well, I'm just so busy at Christmas time. We run to 7 different houses on Christmas Day and blah, 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 which is, it is a lot, especially as you get older and become a parent, have to get the kids everywhere and buy gifts for different sides of the family. It gets expensive. But I do think it's important that, like you said, we take a step back and just realize the importance of it. I'm going to go a different way on this with culture, though. I think the commercialized aspect of Christmas culturally has actually done a harm to the church. And the reason I say that is,
interesting,
we have raised up a bunch of kids that we tell them, hey, if you're a good kid, you know, Santa's going to give you a whole bunch of free stuff. And I've never met one kid that
from
made the naughty
list. Mother's womb.
That's a good take.
I've never met. I'm not going to
actually pause. Before you go any further, if you're listening to this and your kids are in the car,
yep, stop listening. We'll give you 5 seconds.
Stop listening. Okay, and then
we don't want them to think Santa's not coming.
Because there are timestamps in the description of the podcast episode. You should use the timestamps to navigate the rest of the episode. Okay, John, go. Because what you're about to say is important.
It is important. I'm not going to be such a strong, angry strickler of like, I'm anti-Santa Claus. You should not teach your kids Santa. That's not what I am. Me and my wife have had this conversation, and we think we're going to do it as well.
I do think there's a way to redeem the Santa image. That's a different discussion, probably for a different day.
And we can talk about like Saint Nick and where we get this from, because he was an actual guy. But anyways, where I'm going with this is, we've essentially raised up these kids who we are telling, it's kind of like we're contradicting ourselves. We're telling them, hey, if you can just be good, if you're good for your parents, if you're quote unquote a good kid, even though little Sally or little Johnny is actually a brat most of the time. but if you're just good at this time of the year, Santa Claus is going to see everything you do. He's omniscient. He's omnipresent, and he'll get you presents. And then these kids who are sinners, like we're failing to tell them about their sin nature, or even if we do, we're contradicting that with Santa Claus. They're growing up thinking that they're good and thinking that, well, I'm a good person, but so-and-so, you should know what they're doing, right?
Or they think they're really bad, and then they've built a works-based theological framework.
So I'm not saying the problem with our kids nowadays is that we've taught them Santa Claus, but I do think it's done a great harm to them, whether we want to talk about it or not.
I do think that I agree with you in saying I think basic textbook cultural Santa is, I mean, theologically super errant. I mean, it's like, because Here's something that like to sort of take that and sort of think about it a different way. Mm-hmm. There are families and children and families that are extremely poor, that what it looks like for Santa to come to them or for Santa to come at all is wildly different than how I grew up.
Yeah.
Right. Just from if we really understand who Santa really is. Right. So you're also telling those kids that it doesn't matter how good you were, you aren't good enough.
Yeah.
Which is theologically true as it pertains to the gospel, but what a super defeating mindset to build in a child that, like, it doesn't matter how great of character you had, he just didn't like you that much, so don't worry about it, right? That's just, once again, theologically, technically true, but the gospel is not really about what you can earn. It's about what Jesus earned on your behalf. And the whole Santa paradigm, the cultural one, the textbook cultural one that Coke puts on a commercial, is essentially a works-based theological framework that's I mean, I agree with you. It's probably pretty damaging. Yeah.
And I think it just, I don't want to say it raises up like bad kids or anything like that. That's not where I want to get at. But I actually, just a minute ago, when we were talking about what we're going to talk about in this podcast and the cultural implications, I looked up this Saint Nick character. Have y'all ever actually like studied him before? Mm-hmm. Just a quick rundown. Like, you go back to when he was alive, he was known for being generous and giving to the poor And, you know, they were people in slavery that he would provide finances with to get out of slavery, that type of thing. Like, he did some really cool things, but we've turned him into this figure to where he's going to give the rich families a whole lot of stuff. And, like, kind of like what Cooper said, the poor families who perhaps can't afford it, like, he doesn't give them quite as much. Like, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with that, to be honest with you. But I just feel like if you want to look at it culturally and not biblically, even that's gone so far astray to where it's literally just become this commercial consumer type thing where it's just, I really think it's kind of damaging.
So you and I are saying very similar things, but from different angles, because my argument is the commercialization of Christmas has made it easier for me as a believer to leverage that for the beauty and the glory of the gospel. Mm-hmm. You're also saying at the same time, because it's been so easy to do that, it's actually really caused us to lean into cultural Christmas more than it has into biblical Christmas. And I think both those things are true in a certain sense, intentional with one another, right? That's sort of the blessing and the curse, right? As it becomes more accessible, right, culturally, it also becomes easier to dilute and sort of manipulate. And so, yeah, I mean, Santa being one of the greatest examples, I think you can easily, as a Christian family, grab that image from Christmas and just leverage it and just redeem it in the right way. And I would take that over maybe an alternative. But to your point, I think you made a great point. The challenge is also that we have really overdone it. Like, something I thought about recently, which is kind of a funny thought, but like, why do we decorate for Christmas but not other things? Like, would it not be fine to like put up, I mean, I guess we maybe put up Easter decor kind of, but like.
Like eggs.
But I mean, even some sort of like death, burial, resurrection imagery. Like, we're not going out of our way to put anything on the, like, we're not going out of our way to put flowers up for Easter, but we put greenery up for Christmas. Like, I don't know. Just a thought I had. Like, there's an easy way to get away from the, I do it because I'm supposed to, and get back to I do it because I should, which is, you go to church because you're supposed to, because it's Christmas. No, you go to church because you should, right? But anyways, I'm talking in a circle, yeah.
Going back to Santa, though, just kind of off the cuff, I'm not really a big fan of how we tell him, like, he's always watching. He knows when you're asleep and awake. Like,
hey,
like,
yo.
Like, he's not what? You know,
what a crazy lyric that you never get away with in 2025.
He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake.
Santa's on the
phone. He knows if you've been bad or good. Like Santa's not deity. So let's throw that out there.
Yeah, because, I mean, really quickly, I'll just go ahead and put a bow on that thought. It's really easy to explain the Santa image as an image of the gospel.
Yeah.
Which is like, hey, he's not bringing them because you deserve them. Hey, because you don't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
What kind of revival would happen in America if kids actually got coal? On our next podcast, we'll talk. No, I'm just kidding. Anything else? Cultural implications? Lucas, you got anything?
This is kind of a little different from what y'all are saying. One is agreeing with Cooper. I'll get to that in a second. But number one is like decoration stuff. I'm a big fan of decoration stuff, especially around Christmas. You talked about it a little bit. I'm even like,
it is fun, man.
If you think about it in a church sense, I know some people be like, oh, we shouldn't decorate the church for Christmas. We shouldn't do this. Man, come on now. Go have some fun.
Shout out Michael Davis.
Yeah, he does a great job, but I think it's beautiful.
Great job. Our church looks great.
Yes. But as I've gotten older, I've sat down and I've kind of realized like, man, around Christmas, everything's like really cool. It's beautiful. And it reminds me. I've been reminded over the past few years that, man, these decorations are cool. They're beautiful. But how much more beautiful is the story of what Christ has done?
That's a good point.
And Him being born. And that's just like something for me that I've sat down and realized that, man, a lot of times we get around Christmas and we have a lot of fun. We talk a lot. We have great conversations. But man, the beauty of what it's about is so important to me. And I think it ties in, secondly, that agreeing with you, Cooper, talking about a perfect opportunity to share the gospel. Like, yeah, everybody can say, man, it's Christmas. We shouldn't be going into this pagan stuff, this worldly stuff of Christmas as the church. Man, there's been so many opportunities I've got to share the gospel through Christmas. There's multiple times overseas where someone didn't know really nothing about Christianity, but they said, hey, you're from America, and asked me about Christmas, and I said, do you know what Christmas is about?
Yeah.
And got the opportunity to share the gospel.
That's really cool.
And so I think it's so cool that we can get this opportunity in the month of December to basically double down and be like, hey, this is the gospel. This is what it's about. Man, we celebrate and we have so much fun around Christmas. This is the core of it. This is why we do it. Behold the child in the manger, but behold my Savior on a cross, and to tie it straight in. Because, like you said earlier, there's no cross without the birth. You got to have both. Mm-hmm. So you go from one to the other. That's the whole gospel.
Yeah.
That's how we get it.
Yeah. So to sort of wrap up this conversation, let's go around the circle really quickly and let's do something kind of fun as it pertains to Christmas. First, Gabe, we'll start with you. Favorite Christmas family tradition? We're the same family, so I'm curious to know what your answer is.
Favorite Christmas
family. Gabe's my little bro tradition. For real.
I had an idea too. I might give you my favorite Christmas movie as well.
Oh no, we'll do movies.
Okay, we'll do movies. Okay,
yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Favorite Christmas family tradition. Okay, I got two.
That's fine.
They're both not really the same. Either Uncle Butch's cookies.
Yeah, my Uncle Butch makes no bake chocolate peanut butter oatmeal cookies.
They're the best
you've ever had.
They're so good. I've never had anyone that has any got anywhere near as good as those.
Yeah, they're gas.
Or I would say Nana getting us all the same pair of pajama pants.
My Nana has done pajamas for as long as I can remember. Everybody gets a pair of pajamas at Christmas.
Those are probably two of my favorite.
Those are kind of close. Because traditionally, you always get them on Christmas Eve, so you can wear them for Christmas morning. That was always cool.
We're always matching. So
yeah, that was always cool.
Pretty cool. Big fan.
My family is changing a lot because a lot of the kids are now having kids, or the grandkids are now having kids because just the way the family... Did I say that weird or something?
No, that's fine.
Okay, well, our family dynamic is changing because
big time.
we have a big family that we were all the same age. And now that we're older and married, we're having kids. So, like, all of our traditions are kind of changing right now. Like, it seems like the past 2 or 3 years, every Christmas Eve or Christmas, we're having to go different places that we didn't the year before because people had other things come up. So we're still trying to establish our traditions again that we once had. So I would just say, for me, probably just getting together with my wife, and this will be the first one with my daughter that she'll actually like know what she's doing. Because last year she was very little, like she didn't open her gifts. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Don't really have like a major tradition because it's all changing.
I'll ask you this though. What's one tradition you want to add into your family? Now that you are married, you have one daughter, a son on the way. What's something you want
to
add in?
I'm really excited to read them the Christmas story, like on Christmas Eve, or just like we pick a day to sit down and do it, and I get the chance to teach them that. But also the new movie that came out not too long ago. Oh God, what's the name of it? It's got the family of kids who go into the church for the Christmas
party. Best Christmas pageant ever.
We've talked a little bit about
phenomenal
that.
Phenomenal movie.
Yeah. And Summer wants it to be a tradition that we sit down and watch that.
The play is phenomenal. I've seen the play
The movie's super good.
I'll be honest with you.
My only beef is they got so close to sharing the gospel. All they had to do was sneak a sentence in there. But it's a good movie.
I'm usually not a big fan of like just Christmas movies or even just Christian movies because I feel like they're super shallow.
Christian movies are cheeks. We'll talk about that.
They're super shallow. But I love that movie, and Summer really likes it too. Speak so yourself. We're gonna watch. That.
You're gonna say Facing the Giants is cheeks.
is the Book of Eli a Christian movie? Anyway,
the Book of Eli is phenomenal. Denzel Washington. Never is the
do not actor. Watch Never it if you're listening to us. It's Denzel Washington. Watch the TV edit. But yeah, that's the only one I've seen.
Great actor. Though.
Favorite family tradition?
Mine ties into the movies. Every single year, we sit down as a family, us four, and we watch National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation every single year. And no joke, we quote it, we know it. Like, I have one of the reindeer eggnog mugs. Oh, I was drinking out of it yesterday.
I've wanted those forever.
It is my favorite thing. I drink eggnog every day.
I like eggnog, but it depends on whose eggnog it is.
I've never actually had eggnog.
Some of it's good, some of it's bad to me.
I've never had homemade eggnog, though. I've had store-bought. So,
yeah.
I want to get Steve Keen. Say he's going to bring me some.
Shout out Steve Keen.
He does everything.
I do want to say another tradition I just thought about. We watched that movie like with my dad. My dad, that's his favorite movie. My favorite tradition is watching him laugh at it, even though he's seen it a million times. Like, Cousin Eddie cracks him up like it's nothing.
So that doesn't shock me at all. Favorite tradition. This is maybe not necessarily a tradition per se, but as I've gotten older and I now have like real money, sort of, even though I work at a church. It's been really fun the last few years having the ability to get people gifts. I love to give people gifts and buy things for them, particularly my wife. And so it's cool to be able to do that because forever I was a receiver of gifts. And so it's been cool to like give people things because I pride myself in being a pretty good gift giver. I feel like I could find pretty cool stuff for people. So that's been really fun.
I'll send you my sizes after we get off.
This is actually my first year buying gifts, so I'm looking pretty forward
to it. Status.
Favorite Christmas movie, go ahead.
Oh, 100% without a doubt, Four Christmases. Four Christmases is the best Christmas movie ever.
It's pretty funny.
It's so hilarious.
What is that?
Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Phenomenal. Marginally inappropriate. We will go ahead and give that disclaimer, but it is funny.
It's hilarious.
Well, mine, I've already said it, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, but I will give my number two, which is probably the live edition of The Grinch.
Terrible movie.
The Jim Carrey Grinch. That one's a banger, dude.
Terrible movie.
John does not know ball.
Why do you not like that movie, John?
The animated one's better.
I think it's terrible.
Except the animated one, the new one, has great music.
You don't think the Jim Carrey Grinch is funny, bro?
I don't.
You don't think that movie's funny?
It is pretty.
Oh my gosh, you don't have a sense of humor. The movie's hilarious.
It's just kind of uncanny for me, but my number two is probably Polar Express.
Ooh.
Polar Express is a banger.
Banger. Crazy pool.
All right, John, what's your favorite Christmas movie?
Never mind.
If you say a Christmas story, I'm going to burn your house down.
No, definitely not a Christmas story. I mean, I don't really have one. I'm looking them up right now because I don't really watch Christmas movies.
That's crazy.
I hate the movie Elf.
What?
I don't like Elf. Oh my gosh, you don't like Elf or The Grinch?
Okay, Elf. John, Elf is kind of insane.
I'm not gonna lie; those are some of the worst takes I've ever heard come out of your mouth.
I'll be honest; I don't like anything. Who's the actor in Elf? What's his name?
Will Ferrell.
I don't like anything.
Are you kidding?
Oh my gosh.
I don't like any Will Ferrell.
Dude,
Talladega Nights is like my favorite movie.
Yes.
Will Ferrell makes the funniest movies of all time. Let me guess. Hold on.
Will Ferrell will give you invite to the pod.
I got
to
ask you this question. After that egregious take you just had, have you seen the movie The Longest Yard?
Yes.
Do you think it's funny?
Yes.
That's your problem. Adam Sandler ain't funny, dog.
Okay, now that's crazy.
I think that movie's
good. Adam Sandler's hilarious.
I'm not the biggest Adam Sandler fan, like in Big Brother. That's the movie where he's... No, what's the... Billy Madison. When he plays those characters, I think it's stupid. But I love The Longest Yard.
I cannot believe you don't like the Jim Carrey Grinch or Elf. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you even American? That's an insane take.
I don't think they're funny at all.
That's going to be physically angry.
When's the last time you watched it?
I watch it every year because Summer watches it.
John Harmon, I'm not going to lie. You might be the only person living on the face of the planet that doesn't think the Jim Carrey Grinch is funny.
Let me just say this. If anybody is still listening to the podcast, if you haven't gotten annoyed and just clicked off yet, this is how I get treated on a daily basis.
It is.
Because he gives takes like that.
Okay, sorry. Anyways,
let me tell you my favorite.
What's your actual favorite movie?
I just watched this the other day for the first time.
I cannot wait for this to be a horrible movie.
The Red One. Have y'all seen that new one with Dwayne Johnson in it?
Oh.
I watched it.
You don't like it? I think it's pretty good.
It's okay.
I liked it.
J.K. Simmons is pretty good.
I haven't seen it.
The Rock plays the same role in 20 different movies.
The Rock is phenomenal.
It's definitely a cool concept. I think they missed on the casting a little bit.
Facts.
But the concept is really cool.
I thought it was good.
Okay, lastly, favorite Christmas song.
Ooh.
I got to look these up, too.
Oh. All right, I have two.
Oh, I got one.
Okay. One is a shout-out to my roommate, Landon Stowe, who put me onto this. The song St. Patrick's Day by John Mayer is indeed a Christmas song. Either that or...
Wow, this is a guy who wears thrifted clothes and goes to restaurants you never heard of.
It's great.
Of course, you had to pull out a John Mayer song.
Either that...
This guy lives at the beach.
Or... I'd say Please Come Home for Christmas by the Eagles. I think it's a solid one. Pretty good song. Or Players Ball Christmas version by Outkast. So I have actually three.
Yeah, thanks for giving us three songs nobody's ever heard of. Anyways, who's next?
Yeah, I don't know any of those.
Okay.
You know I'll go because John's looking up music right now.
I am.
Buddy's I'll go Christmas song.
Silent Night by The Temptations. Never heard it. Look it up.
Silent Night by The Temptations.
It is phenomenal. Temptations is a group that is phenomenal, by the way, but Silent Night, as a song as a whole, is great. But by them, man.
I will say, sorry to interrupt. A couple weeks ago, or our last Christmas service at King's, we sang Oh Holy Night in like an acoustic guitar version.
Oh Holy Night, the stars are brightly shining. This is the night of our dear Savior's birth.
Yeah, it's that like one? The fall on your knees, I'll hear the angel voices.
Yeah.
That's Holy Night.
Or, yeah, dude. Holy! It went so hard because they sang like with a guitar. It was phenomenal.
All right, so I do have three as well, but I will say easily my favorite one. Y'all can call me old for this. Is Oh Holy Night?
Oh Holy Night's
but
really good.
If you haven't listened,
why
to
would
it,
I call you old for that?
Well, because it's like a traditional old school song.
It's good.
You don't like the Jim Carrey Grinch, so I'm having a hard time even finding a way to digest your entertainment takes.
It's not funny.
So,
but if you haven't listened to it, like of course everybody knows the Carrie Underwood song she does. But Josh, I think it's Groban, Groban is his last name. He sings a really good Oh Holy Night, but I love that song. But the other two songs that I really like, y'all are gonna probably think this is stupid.
Well, I thought you did three. This has turned into four.
No, I said three. So that was one. I'm going to give you the last two. All right. My second favorite song is Jackson 5, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. I just really like Jackson 5.
Jackson 5 goes hard.
That's I think Michael take. Jackson was such a great singer as a kid.
Or Mommy Rest Kissing. Peace, I saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about
my
that.
My dad loves that song.
All right. Kind of an odd song. It's kind of odd.
My third one, and this is going to get me ran out of the room, Santa Tell Me by Ariana Grande.
What a random
I don't even know that song.
Never heard of it.
Go listen.
I don't worship
Santa
the devil.
Santa, tell me, is a good
whoa,
song.
Whoa.
Bushcraft.
All right, I'll wrap this up and just say this. I don't really have a favorite Christmas song because I'm not a Christmas music guy.
You're so lame, dude.
But Christmas. This time of year, you know what I do, especially while I'm at work. I listen to a lot of Christmas lo-fi is what I listen to.
Mm. What is lo-fi?
Oh, my gosh, John. We got to have that conversation off air. I listen to a lot of Christmas.
I do that when I read.
I listen to a lot of Christmas lo-fi just to kind of set the mood. There's also a Star Wars Christmas playlist, I think, somewhere. Like Christmas lo-fi that's Star Wars themed. And it's
never heard that. I need to find that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But anyways, we're going to wrap this up. We've been talking for almost an hour. Part of that was at least sort of pointless. But shout out Emma, because I know she loved our football bit. Shout out those of you who are in total agreement with the three of us that John Harmon not liking Elf or the Jim Carrey Grinch. I mean, that makes me mad. I mean, my blood pressure is going up.
I'm assuming you also love the animated A Christmas Carol.
I do. Yeah.
Oh, I knew it.
It's a good one.
I knew it.
I'm not going to lie. Animated Christmas Carol is hard.
That movie's so weird. I can't stand that movie.
That movie might be weird, but it's hard.
I can't stand
it. I like an alternative take on Christmas. You know, I don't need to see another reindeer. You know, like I'm fine with seeing something more interesting than that.
It's pretty good.
A little scary though, because it's got that like realism animation like Polar Express does. But anyways, thanks for joining.
I'm Gabe.
I'm John Harmon.
I'm Lucas.
I'm Cooper. Thanks for listening. Later, skater.